you know, ask you a little more detailed memories about your childhood and some of the fondest memories. Let's say
what age are we talking childhood?
Really, childhood is everything. So it can be up to age of 10. It can be up to teenage years. All right. That's what I'm going to do. I'll ask you a little bit about later years when you do have more memories. Who were your friends that you used to hang out with that you can remember? What did you do as a kid for fun?
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a question?
Yeah, that's a question.
Dad, do I have to say it again? Who were my friends?
Who were your best friends? Who did you hang out with? And what did you do for fun, specifically?
Okay. I guess I'll probably have to answer all of these questions in different stages of my childhood. Because I have several different stages of my childhood. I have a stage, for example, when I was in Kaskia with my mom and my dad. That was like from between... let's say 4 and almost 8. Then I have a stage when I was in Cologne living with my grandparents in Cativa, which was from about almost 8 to 11. And then I have another stage when I moved to New York with my mom, which is like from 11 to 19 or something like that. So, I mean, those are three very different stages of my childhood. You know, so that's why the original question was kind of like difficult. So this question is even more difficult because now I have to explain to you I have to answer one question based on three different stages of my life. And then we break the fact.
Or you can pick one of those stages that you have the fondest memories are from.
Well, actually, I remember things from all of those stages.
Okay.
Actually, you know, so it's not like one stage is just of course the first stage was the shortest stage, and it was kind of like it's just playing, like fun and school and stuff like that. So most of my friends were like neighbors, right in the neighborhood. It was a poor neighborhood. It still is a poor neighborhood, basically. And most people live with their mom and dad. That was kind of, now that I think about it, that was kind of interesting, you know, because I mean, my mom and my dad were. We're living together, you know, so, and then one of my best friends from upstairs, he lived upstairs from us. His parents lived in the same house, too, or whatever, so, but. Many games like, stickball, tag, anything that has to do with running and that kind of stuff. Little kid stuff, you know. Now, when we moved to Cologne when I moved to Cologne with my grandparents, it was a little different. Like, I think the kids were a little street smarter, you know. They were a little older for their age, you know. So that was, like, a little bit different. And then I was like the boy from the city that came to the country or something like that, you know. So it's usually you come from the country, you move to the city, but that was like, the kids were still a little street smarter in Cologne than in Panama City. That was fun. Growing up in Cologne was a lot of fun. Because the difference with Cologne was that, the kids lacked even more resources, but... We kind of like, it was more of a creative thing, because we lack resources. So we played a game called Huacho. You know what Huacho is? Huacho is like, you have dirt and you form mud with it, right? And then you have a stick and you throw your stick on the mud or something like that. And then like your stick is in the mud, and then somebody else, when they toss, they have to like hit your stick or something like that. I mean, and then again, require water, mud and a stick. You understand what I'm saying? But it was like, okay. And then it was more of a rural setup too. Got trees, mango trees, marañón, mamón, you know. So that was kind of fun too, because you know you get to climb trees and that kind of stuff. So that was fun. And most of my friends there were from the neighborhood around the area, and also from school. I had a very good friend in school. This was like from first grade, from third grade to sixth grade, I had like the same students, you know, that I, in the same classroom, but, you know, different grades or whatever. So I was very good friends with this one kid, and I thought this kid was rich. It was interesting, too, you know, because he lived in Colón City. He was a Spanish kid. He lived in Colón City, and he lived in a building, like an apartment building, you know. And he had an Atari video game stuff, and you know, so I was like, I actually thought this kid was rich, and it was only until after, you know, when I was older and we got, you know, we hung out, I was like, oh, this kid's just, you know, he was better off than we were, but not necessarily rich, you know. So, but now in the States, once we moved to New York, we're talking like from 11 on, it was a little different as far as play, you know. It was like the play was more organized now, and I think maybe because I'm older, so now we're playing like softball, team sport. I'm playing softball, we're playing basketball, you know, that kind of stuff. There's no like we're playing football, American football. There's really no like running around playing any silly games or anything like that. It's like, okay, we're playing sports now, you know. So I was in another poor neighborhood in New York, in Brooklyn, and Bronxville was called. Most of my friends, again, were from the neighborhoods. Most of my friends even were black. I mean, most of my friends were just black kids from the neighborhood or whatever. Even, I remember leaving the Cologne, living in Cologne, right? And I left to the States, and the kids like would know that I spoke Spanish, you know. And it was like, you know, they asked me where I was from. I tell them I was from Panama, and they're like, well, you know, they always ask if there are black people in Panama. I'm like, yeah, most of the people in Panama are black, because I thought that most of the people in Panama were black. Living in Cologne, whatever, and I'm like, so when I left Panama, I left from Cologne to the airport, and I'm gone, and I'm like, oh yeah, most of the people in Panama are black, you know, because Cologne is my world or whatever. So, and that was kind of interesting when I came back, like when I came back from the States, I still thought, you know, and then when I get out of the plane, the minute I get out of the plane and I look around, I realize that all these years I was just wrong. You know, I just had the wrong information. I mean, it didn't take any time at all. It was kind of like when I get off the plane and I see the people in the airport, who's working where, who's doing what, and automatically it's like, wow, I was wrong. You know, most of the people in Panama are not, you know, black, you know. So that was kind of like an interesting culture shock, which is interesting because it's supposed to be my culture, but I'm shocked, you know, by my culture.
How old were you when you came back?
I was 19. Yeah, so.
Cool. Now, tell me a little bit about your parents and your grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Where did they come from, and how did they end up in Panama? So we'll start off, I'm just going to ask you where your father and your mother were mm-hmm. from, where were they born?
Okay, my mom was born in Colón, actually.
Okay.
My dad was born in Panama City, but then he moved to Colón, later moved to Colón. Tatira, Colón.
Okay. And then your maternal grandfather and grandmother.
Okay, my grandfather, he was actually born in Boca del Toro. And from Boca del Toro, he moved over to Colón. My grandmother, she was born in Cativa, actually, like, you know, home birth kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then your paternal grandfather and grandmother.
My paternal grandfather, I think he was born in Cologne. And my grandmother, I'm sorry, I don't.
Now, how did, tell me a little bit, I guess, about what you know from your grandparents, how they ended up, especially your maternal grandfather, mm-hmm. who was from Bocas and then came to Cologne. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about how?
Yeah, my grandfather, actually, I have that on DVD, actually. Yeah, so good. It's an interesting story. I think it was more of a his mom moving from Bocas to the coastal areas of Cologne, really, you know, and his father or his stepfather, I don't recall which one of them are, off the top of my head, were working like collecting rubber from rubber trees and like, you know, selling this kind of stuff. And then eventually they got into gold digging, like from these streams and stuff like that, literally with the sifting and stuff like that. And the gold stuff was more in the Cologne, the coastal. I don't know if it was Costa Abajo or Costa Arriba. I don't remember which one off the top of my head. I don't remember the story exactly, you know, but he says that one day he was like digging gold with his stepfather, and his stepfather found a piece of gold like the size of a thumb, right? But his stepfather didn't tell anyone that he found this piece of gold, and he kind of saw that his stepfather found this piece of gold, but like kind of hid it from him and stuff, you know. So it was kind of like, and then he basically just left. His stepfather left, like, to Cologne City to basically get money for the school and, you know, live it up or whatever, you know. But that flopped, you know. So then my grandfather ended up in Cologne because back then there were, like, you know, jobs were, like, a dime a dozen with the canal being built and the canal zone area and stuff like that. So he kind of, like, he ended up moving to Cologne, like, working in different jobs with the military. I think his first job was like kind of like with the military. He was like a water boy. He was a water boy where the men were out in the field and stuff like that. And he would literally come with like a water bucket or whatever in that kind of way. So, I think even though he was working in Cologne City, well, in one of the military bases, he was actually living in Catiba. And that's where he met my grandmother in Catiba. So, okay. You should be able to tie that somehow with their story. Because mm-hmm. I don't know if, you know, they said that, but that's what I mean. So, I mean, he was a working man. I mean, he was a working man. And when I tell him what I do, like, you know, it's like, that's not like a real job, you know. It's like, I'm in the office all day with AC and you know, I'm sitting in front of a computer and stuff, and he's like, that's not a job. Like, a job is like you gotta be working out in the field, like, you know, sweating or whatever, you know. But so that's the kind of man that he was, you know. He was a, you know, I have a lot of respect for my grandfather because his presence, I mean, he had a lot of presence, man. He'll walk into a room and he'll just take over that room. And he could, you know, as a kid growing up, he never beat me or, you know, or anything like that. Because his presence was so strong, all he had to do was to just look at you when you were doing something wrong. And, like, that was like, you know, whatever you're doing, you have to stop what you're doing. Or whatever you did, you just know you can't do that again, you know. So he was that kind of person.
Anybody else that you know, maybe how they got to Cologne? It seems like most people were born in Cologne, so it was like they
like my
born.
my great grandmother. Mm-hmm. She actually came from Jamaica.
Okay.
She came with her family. She was like 11 when she got to Panama or something like that. Mm-hmm. And her family actually came and came to Panama City, but I don't think it was directly related with the building the canal or anything like that. It was more of a, she came with an aunt, and I guess she was probably looking for opportunities. But back then, I don't think there were like a lot of women working directly with the canal. So I don't think like, you know, so her mom, and then her aunt, and actually she also worked with the Maduros. You know, the Maduro family, the big name Maduro family. They were like, you know, housekeepers and, you know, babysitters and stuff like that with the Maduro family. And I don't know how she really ended up in Cativa from Panama City. To be honest, I don't know how she ended up, but somehow she ended up, she went from Cativa to Panama City, and that's where my grandmother was born.
Okay.
Right in Cativa, so.
Yeah. Like my great grandmother, actually. Didn't come for the canal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worked. Okay, now let's go over their professions. Your dad's profession and your mom's profession. I guess the most current, if they're not.
Nah, they don't have professions. They're workers.
Okay.
They're workers.
And what about grandparents then?
My grandparents, man, they're workers.
Both sides, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because I was talking to a good friend of mine some time ago. And he tells me his story, how his family had to work hard. You know, it's a black guy from the States, black American. And his grandfather has a university degree. You know, he's like, yeah, my grandfather worked hard, and he went to college, and he did this and that. And it's like, okay, cool. That was, you know, it's an interesting story. And then it made me kind of reflect on my family. It's like, I'm the first generation going to university in my family, which is kind of like, wow. And not just university, like, my grandfather, he got to second grade, you know, and he basically learned how to read and write and do math with one of these homeschools that they had where some teachers, some of the people that came from Jamaica were actually well-educated people. They were not all, like, you know, labor workers, you know. So some of them opened, like, these schools in their home and stuff like that. So that's, my grandfather ended up learning how to read and write in one of those schools and stuff like that. Eventually, even teaching in a place like that. So, and my grandmother, the same thing. She still has one of those royal readers or something like that. So, and my mom, she went to high school. She got pregnant with my older sister, had to drop out of high school. My dad, that was a real sad story. My dad, you know, he's a smart guy, and he's going to school. And the first day of school, they give him a list of the stuff that he needs for the school year. So he comes home and he shows this list to his grandmother, and his grandmother says, okay, we don't have any money to buy any of this stuff, so you can't go to school. So it was like, that was the end of him going to school. And I guess the list was like, you know, the regular stuff, new books, this book, that book, a pencil, whatever, you know, whatever. And she's like, we don't have money to buy that stuff, so you can't continue going to school. So eventually he had to like start working on them. So I'm like the, you know, I'm like the first generation that, you know, actually graduated from high school, you know, and then eventually college, you know. So I am, you know, they're just, I mean, I don't want to say just workers, but they don't really have a professional or a professional career or anything like that. You know, they work.
And your maternal grandfather, he is currently a pastor, right?
Oh, well, yeah, my maternal grandfather, he's a pastor. My father, he works for the canal now. He's he works on a tugboat. He's a bosun. He's basically in charge of the crew on the tugboat, except for the captain and the engineer. He's in charge of the other crew.
Okay. So. Yeah.
And my mom, she works in a hospital. She's, I think, a hospital technician is what they call it. Mm-hmm. Not sure. My dad's father, actually, He was an electrician, so I guess he was a tradesman. So I guess he did have a profession, because I remember he worked at this hospital in New York, and he was an electrician, which is like a kind of trade, and you need to have a license and all this other stuff, you know. But he went to the military. He did, you know, some military stuff, but I don't think he did the university and stuff. I am assuming that because he went to the military, he may have graduated from high school, but that might not have been the case back then.
Next question is about school, mm-hmm. and you can divide it up in those three different mm-hmm. segments we did before. What was school like? How and who were your teachers? And what do you remember about your time as a school kid? We could start with Karaskia.
Uh-huh. Okay, Karaskia was like kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. And school was fun. I mean, I didn't have any problems with school. I actually got my first grade report card somewhere. I'll show it to you. I got all fives in first grade. But so school was fun. I mean, during those first years in Karaskia, not really much outstanding about school. The teachers were pretty good. They were all female. You know, all the teachers were women. And
which school was in Karaskia?
Okay, in Karaskia, I went to Republica de Puerto Rico for kindergarten and first grade. And then second grade, we were still living in Karaskia, but my parents decided to send me to Republica de Haiti, which is, I think, across from the Kelvin or something like that in Rio Bajo.
Okay. Were the teachers there mostly Latina?
Yeah, the teachers were all Spanish.
And the students?
The students, I really don't remember. I wasn't paying attention. You know, I wasn't to that. You know, I wasn't paying attention to what the students. It wasn't important. You know,
yeah.
What the students looked like was not important. Even what the teachers looked like at that moment was just not important. So when I moved to Cologne now, from third grade to about to sixth grade, I had the same teacher for those 3 years, and she was a very good teacher, I think. I mean, she was a good person. She would beat me, because back then teachers could literally beat students. So she would beat me if I got anything less than a 4.0 on a 5.0 scale. You know, because she's like, well, you know, this, you're a good student, and you're supposed to get good grades. And that didn't mean not fail. You know, this other students, you know, she literally had the class divided, not by seating, but she had this division in her mind of what students are allowed to get what grade based on their performance. So she had a group of students that anything below 4.0 was not acceptable for that group of students. And then she had a group of students that, as long as they didn't fail, that was cool, you know. So if you were in that group of students and for whatever reason you got anything below 4.0, she'll beat you.
In front of the classroom?
In front of the classroom, she'll beat you, you know. You just have to hold your hand out and she'll beat you with a ruler or something like that, you know. And she'll beat other students for behavioral reasons and stuff like that. But I never really had a behave bad in school or anything like that. And I remember her because I learned a lot of stuff. I learned the times table with her. And I really like math a lot. I mean, I still like math. I love math. So I remember this one day in fourth grade where she writes on the board, she literally writes on the board the times table from 2 to 9 or something like that. And the class was basically, you're supposed to sit there and look at the board and learn the times table. And when you think you're ready, you'll come up, you turn your back to the board, and she'll call out random, you know. So it was interesting because it's like in one day, In that, not even one day. In that class, you had to learn the times table, you know. So it was like, that's how I learned my times table. Just sitting in the classroom, looking at the board, and then, okay, I'm ready. You'll come up. And then if you weren't ready, if you got too many wrong, she might beat you, or she might just ask you to sit down, or whatever, you know, like that. So, but it was interesting because when I got to the States now, that was like really disastrous, to be honest. It was really culture shocking because I remember doing work, tests, exams, and mind you, I go to a 100% Spanish school to 100% English school. No, I didn't do any bilingual school or anything like that. And then, and I didn't really grow up speaking English. You know, I understood quite a bit because my parents or my grandparents, but they didn't really speak a lot of English to me. It was interesting because there was a time where, like, okay, we were getting closer. My parents separated. My mom went to the States, and just like everyone else, you know, there are jobs in the States, there's money in the States. So she left to the States, you know, and then my sister and I, we're living with my grandparents. And we got to a point where, like, okay, now you guys are going to have to, at the end of this year or something like that, you're going to move to the state with your mom. And my problem was, my English was very limited. My sister, she knew more than I did. So then they started, okay, well, you know, once in a while they'll say stuff to me in English and stuff like that because they knew that we were going to be leaving soon or whatever. But I never really, you know, felt that I was really comfortable with the English. So in school we had an English teacher. I don't remember his name. He was a black guy. He was the only black teacher I could remember in the school, now that I think back, in the Cologne school. Now, I'm not saying that he was the only black teacher. He's the one that I remember. You know, the English teacher was a black guy. And I remember, you know, learning you are, you know. And then when I get to the States, the kids are like, you is. So I'm like, wow, this teacher didn't know English. This teacher, you know. So it was kind of like, you know, I felt like, wow, this teacher, how much more did this teacher not know? You know, because it was common for the students to say you is opposed to you are. So I'm hearing everybody say you is. So I'm thinking you is right and you are was wrong, you know. So, and then that's one thing. Another thing was the kids were really mediocre. And this is a school in the middle of a black neighborhood in Bronxville, poor, surrounded by public housing. And stuff. And the kids, the teacher will call you whenever you take a quiz, test, any writing. The teacher will call you, and you know, you get your paper and you see what grade you got, and you basically react based on that grade you got. Okay, you know. So the kids will get their papers, and they'll be happy. Wow, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, everybody's getting A's, you know. And it was like the kids were happy because they passed or because they didn't fail. You know, so that was like, whoa, I mean, you got a C or you barely passed, you got a D or something like that. Why are you happy? You know, how could you be happy just because whatever? So that kind of like, I didn't have to, but I kind of changed now my schooling a bit now, so because I didn't want to stand out as the kid that got good grades, you know. And it wasn't really a language barrier. I don't even remember a language barrier, to be honest. I don't remember ever not being able to understand reading and not understand this, even though the change was, you know, from English to Spanish, but I really don't remember. I'm not saying that there wasn't, but I don't remember. So my grades started to fall a bit. But I think my mom probably thought that my grades were falling because of the language barrier. But that wasn't the case. My grades were falling because I figure everybody's happy with just passing. You know, I can just pass too. That's not a big deal. Except for math, though. Math I always got. Because okay. I like math a lot. So I didn't want to be mediocre in math. So that was kind of like, that was interesting. The school, I mean, all of the kids in school were black. all of the kids in school were black, and some Latino, Puerto Ricans back then. And the high school I went to, even the high school I went to, all of the kids in high school were black. A few Puerto Rican, and I remember one Polish kid, one, you know. And once I get to high school was a little more interesting now, because in high school now, I don't have a problem with being smart. So now in high school, it's like, okay, my grades are getting better now. And so what I'm doing is I'm misbehaving now. Because if I'm smart and I behave well, then I'm a full-blown nerd. But if I'm smart and I behave bad now, then, you know. So I'm kind of like misbehaving somewhat in school and stuff like that. But. And the teachers in the junior high school, some Jewish teachers, some black teachers. Remember Miss Sewa? She was like the African. She was like the African woman, you know. She would wear African gear. And we're talking about the 80s when it wasn't really that popular, you know, but she was all right. She taught history and stuff like that. And there was another teacher like that in high school, Miss Fenley. I mean, I remember asking Miss Fenley, like, seriously, and I'm kind of embarrassed about this. Her hair was natural. And I'm talking about 80s, you know, early 90s. And I asked Miss Fenley, like, what's wrong? I mean, why don't you get a perm or something? And she looks at me with this look as if she feels really bad for me, you know? And she's like, you don't get it. You don't get it. I mean, you don't get it. So I was like, wow, you know? You know, I didn't get what she was saying, but she made me feel kind of like, whoa, I really messed up, you know, which I really did, you know? Well, I shouldn't have asked something like that. But she was doing the natural hair, African gear thing, when it wasn't popular, you know. She was also a social studies teacher or whatever. That's a teacher I remember. Another Jewish teacher, the computer science teacher. I was doing computer science in high school, Mr. Konigsberg. He was a good teacher. But one thing I do recall from the teachers, right, and I think the teachers didn't go to that next level, you know. There were some students that were very smart in my high school, right? But I think the teachers didn't really push you to the other level, you know. This is the assignment, this is the homework, this is the test. And you did those, and even though you were outstanding with those, no one really said, you know what, you know, why don't you come here and let me teach you something else, or, you know, let's do some other stuff, you know, take a little more complicated stuff. So,
all right. I have a question about your teacher in Cornon, the teacher you had from third grade to sixth grade.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember her name?
Senia Contreras or something like that. Now, I saw another, one interesting story about Senia. I could be wrong. But one interesting story about early days in school. I don't know if it was Sandy, because I don't know if we were still coloring in third grade. But there was a color called skin color. You know? And, I mean, this was like skin color. And it was like beige or, you know, something like that. And that's the color that whoever the teacher was at the time was like, okay, when the people in the coloring book, you had to paint them skin color. And that was the color, this one beige color. And it was interesting. I never really paid attention to that then. It was only once I got older and I started, you know, sometimes you have flashbacks and you're like, wait a second, what do you mean skin color? You know, I mean, that's a color of maybe some people, you know, but that can't be called skin color, you know. But that was skin color, you know, so. Yeah, exactly. I guess you know, so it's kind of subtle, you know. Mm-hmm. And I won't say that the teacher really meant bad by it or something like that, but, you know, I guess she was like, you know, that's how the system is, and, you know, this is what I'm going to do, you know. I've been doing this for years, and this is that color, and, you know. But I don't think she was systematically trying to, you know, tell us, oh, yeah, white is right, or something like that, you know. So, but, you know, subconsciously, that's what was happening, you know.
Okay, let's talk a little about music. What type of music did you remember growing up hearing?
Mm-hmm.
And what were your favorite singers, your favorite songs?
Mm-hmm. Okay, growing up now, my dad is like a music lover. My dad loves music. He buys like these vinyl records, and he has a whole bunch of vinyl records. And if he's home on a weekend, he has the music on volume fully loaded, you know. So, and he has a lot of different music, but some of the music I don't understand, you know. But he has a salsa. I mean, I love salsa. I'm talking about Drew and Blaze had this album in 80-something, Buscando America. And I knew that album from the first song to the last song, word for word. And I was like maybe 5 or 6 years old. Marvin Santiago had an album called Desde Adentro. This is like, I think, the very first album that an artist made while he was in jail, you know. And I knew that album like from first song to last song. So living with my dad now, my mom and my dad, I mean, I just love salsa music, you know, and it was cool, you know. But it was more of the music than the lyric, because Ruben Blades was a very positive, if you listen to what he was saying back then, you know. But I wasn't really listening. I could repeat every word he was saying, but I wasn't, you know, paying attention to what he was saying. I just liked the sound, you know. Now, when we moved to Cologne now, Haitiano, you know, the Haitian music was like, that was it, you know. So, and, you know, we're listening to Haitian music every day. I remember just, like, with the radio, taping stuff off the radio with my sister and stuff like that. So, and it was interesting because you know, and you're singing along, but you don't know what you're saying, you know. And you don't even know what they're saying, you know. So we listened to a lot of, once we took along, was a lot of Haitiano, you know, whatever popular English song they would play in Panama, we also listened to that. And again, we'll sing along, but not really understand what was being said or anything like that. Once I moved to the States, now I remember the very first day I got to the States. It was snowing that day. My grandfather, my dad's dad, he went to pick us up at the airport with my mom. My sister and I got off the plane, and this lady comes up to us. She's like, hey, and I'm like, who's this lady? And this is my mom, you know. But it took me a second, you know. I guess because of the cold, whatever, her skin got a little bit lighter or whatever. So she didn't really look like what I remember her, but it was my mom. And my grandfather, we're driving home, and he's switching through radio stations or whatever. It's a Saturday night, and some hip-hop music, rap music comes on or whatever. And I remember thinking, this is all right, you know. I remember thinking, this is cool. Even in Cologne, there was a time when breakdancing came to Cologne. A lot of the kids were breakdancing. I tried breakdancing and stuff like that. So breakdancing music was like, you know, some hip-hop music also, you know. But I remember that moment. I remember listening to that radio station, like, oh, this is cool, I like it. And then I remember my grandfather got me a radio for Christmas. And I remember the following Saturday, trying to find that same station that was playing the same music there, exactly. So, I mean, once I got to the States, it was 100% hip-hop. 100% hip-hop. Until I was maybe 18, even before. I started into a little bit into the reggae and stuff like that. And, you know, because of my sister had a lot of Jamaican friends and friends from the islands, you know. And my friends were Americans. I mean, all of my friends were Black Americans. And a few Panamanian kids, but they've been in the States, like, you know, for a long time and stuff like that. So, but now, I mean, now I just like all different types of music, you know. It's very hard to say, oh, I like this. Of course, I prefer hip-hop, I prefer reggae, but I love jazz, I like R&B, I even like gospel music, you know. I love gospel music, even though I'm not really into it like that, but the music in and of itself, I like it, you know. So I'm a music lover. I think because of my dad, I'm a music lover. You know, my dad loved music so much that it was kind of like my thing too. You know. So.
Today, could you name any specific favorite singers or songs? Even though I know you like all kinds, is there any one?
Like right now? Wow. I still like Ruben Blades for a long time. I mean, I love this Ruben Blades album called Maestra Vida. I mean, that album is awesome. When I first heard that album, you know, and the album is, it follows a story, the story of a Panamanian family. If you haven't heard Maestra Vida, you must hear Maestra Vida. And it's such an awesome album, you know, and like, well, and it was interesting because before that, I never sat back and thought, okay, which is my favorite album or my favorite artist or whatever. But when I first heard that, I was like, okay, this is my favorite album across all different genres or whatever. So I think it's still up there. I mean, it's good, you know, it's a very good album, and I love it. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say Ruben Blades is my favorite artist, but I love this album a lot.
What year was this album from?
I don't even remember. It's kind of hard to say right now who is my favorite artist, and, you know, it's really that difficult, you know. So I can say something like this, okay. In hip-hop, if I listen to hip-hop, I like Jay-Z, I like Nas, and there are some others there that I like, but Jay-Z, Nas, I like. And there are quite a few that I also like. But if Jay-Z, Nas put out an album, I have to get that album. Okay? If we listen to reggae now, like reggae, I love Bob Marley. And I love cultural reggae more so than dancehall. You know, the softer sound and that kind of way. If we listen to R&B now, wow, that's a difficult one to answer. But I like I like a lot of the old school R&B, Al Green, Marvin Gaye, Barry White. You know, the new R&B I like it, but I mean, there's not really like, oh yeah, I really like Usher. I can't say that. Oh, I really like Chris Brown. You know, I don't know. I can't say that. You know what I'm saying? So, I like some of the songs that they have, yeah, but I can't say, oh yeah, Chris Brown is my favorite R&B singer. Yeah, it's impossible really for me to say that. So I have different favorite albums across different genres or something like that. But Ruben Blades, Maestra Vida, everyone should listen to that. And if you don't understand Spanish, try to get someone to. It's a very poor. It's a work of art. I mean, the album is a work of art. It really is.
Now, can I get you to sing part of one of your favorite songs, or simply recite the lyrics? Let's say my study that. Is there any particular set of lyrics, part of it, that you have to sing it, but you could tell me, you know, the words. I'm assuming with Ben Blaze's words are...
Okay, now, I'll explain the album. One of the songs in the album is called Maestra Vida, and one of the songs in the album is called Maestra Vida, the very last song in the album. So now the album starts, basically these guys are in a bar, drunk, in Panama. And one of these guys sees a younger guy, and he's like a son of somebody that he knew or something like that. And he's like, oh yeah, I know your family or whatever. And he's telling this guy his family's business. You know, so he's like, oh yeah, you know, your father, man, he wasn't no good, you know, that kind of way, you know. So they do a bar scene, they sing a song. They do a bar scene, they sing a song. Now, Maestra Vida now, and it's like, okay, you know what, I don't know if you remember, when you were in school, the teachers were called, for example, Maestra Senia, Maestra Nayasha, Maestro Victor, Maestro. So Maestra Vida, that's like, okay, it can go both ways with the name of the song, okay? Like, Maestra Vida, like the name of the teacher is life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, and then it could also be taken another way, like, you know, Maestra Vida, like the maestra mean, you know, the, yeah, exactly. So he's, in the songs he's saying how, Maestra Vida, te da y te quita y te da. You know, so it's basically life gives and it takes away. you know, and you're not gonna get me to sing it, no. So I'll play it for you later on or something like that. But you're not gonna get me to sing it. But I mean, it can the album is like, again, it follows the path of this guy and his family, and how we tend to forget about our parents. You know, we just forget about them, and then it comes to a time where, you know, you need them, or you remember those times where you just abandoned them, and they probably they're dead now or something like that, and now you feel bad because you never attended to your parents and you should have, and that kind. So it's something along that line, you know. And it's you know.
Cool. Yeah, I want to hear that after. Now, do you have any favorite sayings? What are your favorite sayings, and where did you first hear them or learn them?
I have some favorite sayings. Mm-hmm. Man, listen, that's one saying.
Mm-hmm. Where you hear that?
That's Berkeley. You know, that's another saying. I mean, it's not a saying. It's just
I know.
Yeah, you know. And that's Brooklyn, too. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's Brooklyn. Now, if we want to take it back to, like, you know, Cologne now. I got some sayings in Cologne, too.
Mm-hmm.
Story, come to question. You know.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
That basically means, like, you know, you're telling a story, right? And then you give a detail that will lead to another story that you probably shouldn't have said, you know. And it's like, wait a second now, story come to question, you know, story come to question. Like, what happened, you know, what happened with that? From John Kill Philip.
What does that mean?
That means a long time ago. From when John Kin Philip, you know, that happened a long time ago.
Okay.
I guess maybe somebody named John killed a guy, Philip, some time ago. And from when John killed Philip, you know, that's another saying. Wow. There are quite a lot more, but you kind of put me on the spot. So, off the top of my head, those are the ones. I got a lot more. They just, it's more of a natural thing. You don't really, you know, think about it. You know, at the moment, you just say it. Now, my grandmother, man, she rules those.
Oh, yeah.
One day I'm going to sit with her and write down all of them. She has the same for every, anything that happens.
Yeah, ask Carrie
to
tell you what she told
us. Oh, yeah? She has a lot of
stuff. Okay, have you ever heard of Louise Bennett?
No, I'm sorry.
And have you ever heard of the Mighty Sparrow?
Yeah, Mighty Sparrow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, what thoughts come to mind when you hear his name? Have you ever seen him perform? And if so, do you remember those performances?
I've never seen him perform. My dad comes to mind. Night of Fun comes to mind. Just black people having fun,
mm-hmm,
comes to mind, you know.
Okay. Do you play any sports?
I play basketball, I guess, yeah.
And you told me as a child, once you got to Brooklyn, you used to play a few sports.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever, first, the sports you mentioned, can you repeat them again? Which ones you played?
In Cologne, I played baseball. Mm-hmm. In the States, I played softball, basketball, mm-hmm, and American football.
So now you still play basketball?
Yeah, once in a while, yeah.
And do you watch basketball?
Yes, yes.
Any favorite teams?
No, really. I have favorite players. I used to be a Knicks fan. I guess I'm still a Knicks fan. They're just so bad that it's kind of shameful to kind of say, They might have a good year this year, though. But I mean, I'm a Knicks fan. I gotta say, I'm a Knicks fan. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say no, but I'm a Knicks fan. But I kind of like players more so than a team, you know, because I'm kind of like watching the game now as a whole, and not necessarily because I want a certain team to win. You know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of more of a studying the game now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So that's more of what I'm doing.
Who would be your favorite players?
Kevin Garnett. I like Kevin Garnett. He's out there 100% every time. You know, LeBron James. Gotta like LeBron James always. Dwayne Wade, even though he had not so good year last year with the injuries or whatever. Like Dwayne Wade. Baron Davis. He's out there 100%. You know, quite a few more, but these are the ones that really come to mind.
Okay.
Don't want to, you know, waste all the ink. Basketball names.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, what did you think of American culture growing up? I know you live in the States, but let's say before you got to the States, did you know much about American culture, and what do you think of
it? No, that? I didn't know much about American culture. All, any kid from Cologne knew does that things were better in the United States. So mm-hmm. That's all anybody knew. Oh, thought. You know, no one really knew, but everyone thought that things were better in the United States of America. So a lot of people, a lot of people really lived with the idea of eventually I'm going to move to the United States, for whatever reason. So, but those are the only thoughts I had about the United States. I remember talking to my mom and, asking my mom, what do you do over there? Are you a secretary or do you work in a big one of these Manhattan buildings or whatever? And she's like, yeah. And then when we get there, she's like, she works in a factory. You know, she's labor working in a factory kind of thing, you know, trying to make ends meet and stuff mm-hmm. like that, which...
Different kind of big building.
Yeah, different kind of big building, So... I mean, it was interesting. And this didn't happen when I moved to the States. This happened after where, things were supposed to be better in the States. And they kind of were. I'm not going to say that they weren't. Things were. But things were still difficult in the States. Things weren't really easy, My mom as a single parent, and two kids at home and that kind of stuff, And, but we didn't really understand how difficult things were because your parents are not going to explain to you how difficult things are. Just when you ask for something, they're just going to say no. They're not going to say, things are difficult. I'm having a hard time paying rent and I got to pay this bill and all this stuff. And that is why you can't get that. They're just going to say, no, you can't get that. So it's kind of difficult to understand at times why we didn't have certain things at the specific moment, but it was later in life where it's like, my mom just didn't want to explain to us, and really she shouldn't have to explain to us, how difficult things were, So that was kind of like a reality check that I had, but it was a reality check after I left the States, actually. It wasn't a reality check while in the States. It was after I left the States, it's like, whoa, things were crazy in Brooklyn. You go to a party, there'd be a shootout, and it wouldn't be a big deal. So it was later in life, okay, you think back, oh yeah, I remember this party, and oh yeah, somebody got shot, or there was a shootout, and it's like, well, that's not normal. It's not normal to go someplace and for there to be shootings. You understand? But while there, it wasn't a big deal. So it was like, wow, that's kind of bad, to have to go someplace and worry about getting shot or something like that, So, but I mean, I like the fact that I grew up where I grew up in the United States, even in Panama, because they're kind of like, things were not easy, So you kind of grow up knowing that things were not easy, and things are not necessarily going to be easy. you know. So you it's something tough about you growing up in tough places, you know. And not necessarily tough in a way like you're bad, you're a thief, or you're stealing and stuff like that. Sure, that's one way, you know, unfortunately. But there's also the other way where, you know what, we're going to make this happen. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of like what I got from living in all of those different places, living in the bush in Cologne or whatever. You know, things happen, you know. And my grandfather was the one working. When I was living with my grandparents, my grandmother didn't work, you know. My grandfather worked. And I thought my grandfather was well off, you know. And it was, again, it was only until later in life that I understood, like, wow, you know, my grandfather was not well off, you know. But you never saw that. You never saw, oh, things are hard, we don't have money for this, and we can't do this. And, you know, the only thing is that you kind of thought they were mean for not buying you certain things, you know. So that was the only thing. But you never saw them really down and out because times were hard. But what you saw was you didn't get certain things, but you didn't understand why you didn't get certain things. Mm-hmm. So that kind of like shaped my outlook in life in a way today, where it's like, you know, things are going to be difficult, you know, but I'm going to make it. You understand what I'm saying? And it's like the world doesn't have to know that things are difficult for you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, even, not just me, but other people in the neighborhood in Cologne, they thought my family was well off. You know, because my grandfather worked for the canal, and my uncle worked for the canal. So everybody thought, well, you know, this family is well off. But, you know, things were difficult. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you had a little more income than your average Panamanian employee in a Panamanian company. Yeah, but things were still difficult. You know, because now my grandparents, they have to take care of two grandkids and stuff like that. You know, and they have a son that's, you know, it's like their youngest son. He's also at home and stuff like that. And then my grandfather, he has like his sister that comes around during payday and stuff like that. And then she has like five daughters or something like that. You understand? And then he has like another brother over here that's probably not working and stuff like that. So all these people come around. You understand? And then he has to look out for all of these people. You know? And the same goes with my uncle also. Like, you know, yeah, he works for the canal. But it's like, you have extended family members that you kind of like have to look out for. And they will not understand if you do not look out for them, because they assume that you're well off. So because of this whole system now, you know, it's like you kind of like, well, you know, yeah, they work for the canal, but we had difficult times because we had extended family members that expected, you know, that for people to look out for them. You know. And so, you know, I guess It was interesting. It was interesting. None of this stuff I kind of analyzed when I was younger. None of this stuff I kind of realized. It was only after, it was like, well, so-and-so used to come around every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks is payday. You understand? But you didn't know back then. You just knew that so-and-so would come around every 2 weeks. Or this person come around on this day. Oh, this person always comes around on this day. You know, why this person? Oh, this person always comes around this day because that's payday. You know, so... But, you know, yeah.
Well, just related to that, at what age do you think you started realizing these things? Was it more when you started working, mm-hmm. or even before you started working?
Wow. That's an interesting question. That's a difficult question. Well, I don't think it was more when I started working. It was more when I came back from the States, and I would go visit my grandparents, and I'll just see. You know, so I wasn't necessarily working. I was in college or whatever. But I'm seeing what's happening. Because a lot of this stuff was still happening. You know what I'm saying? Some family members were still coming around during certain times or whatever. But a lot of this stuff was still happening. And it was kind of like, whoa, okay. You know, so I was just, it was just watching. It was just being older and seeing the same thing, but you're seeing it with older eyes now. You know? So, and then with the stuff with my mom in the States, it was the same thing. It was just being older. And then, okay, wait a second. Okay, if my mom was making this amount of money, and then rent was this amount of money, it's like, whoa, she only had $2. You know? So it's kind of like, you know, you start to analyze things a little more in depth as you get older. And then you understand that. You know, and then you feel bad that you were kind of unfair to your parents in a way, you know. Because you're like, why can't I have this? I want this, you know. And why we got to have no-frilled peanut butter and no-frilled jelly? Why can't we get Peter Pan? You know, that kind of way. And then you kind of feel bad for the way you behave, you know. But.
All right. Now, next section is on identity. What qualities, cultural behaviors, or other things do you associate with West Indianness, of being West Indian? What would be a list of qualities?
Okay. Language would be one, English. Food would be one, the kind of food, you know, music.
Which particular foods and music? Food, examples,
you know, rice and peas, coconut and stewed chicken, cow foot soup, ackee and catfish, you know, brown food like green banana, yuca, that kind of stuff.
And with the music, which music would you say?
Okay, with the music, I would say more of the Mighty Sparrow kind of music, like, you know. And some of the gospel music, the English gospel music. I don't know if that's necessarily gospel, but like the church music, I would say. English church music.
Okay. Now, how has knowing English affected you, whether positively or negatively, at different times in your life?
Wow.
First positively, then negatively.
Well, positively, wow, I mean, my life is in English, you know what I'm saying? It's like my life is in English, you know. I think in English, and then Spanish is like my second language, you know. But I guess, you know, it's difficult to answer that one because my life is in English, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the other way around now, like how has Spanish benefited my life, you know? Mm-hmm. So, well, I guess it's important to be bilingual, you know. I wish I knew more languages, you know. And professional-wise, you know, as a... That's a difficult question, Aisha.
Well, let me ask you to put it in context of everything. Uh-huh. You said that when you were first in Panama as a kid, young, everything was in Spanish.
Uh-huh. Right?
And then you went to the States, mm-hmm. and even though you had heard English around in your family, when you went to the States, then everything turned around into
English. Uh-huh.
To the point where now you're an adult, uh-huh. and you literally feel like English is more of a first language. Uh-huh. Think in English. Mm-hmm. So... I guess if we think about the question the way you put it, how knowing Spanish has affected you positively after now English is this main language for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe even in the States before coming back to Panama.
Well, the advantage to knowing Spanish where I grew up in the States was basically that you knew when some people were talking bad about you, didn't expect it. Mm-hmm. If you want to call that an advantage. I remember going into the grocery stores, the Dominicans or Puerto Rican, the corner stores in Brooklyn, mainly Dominican and Puerto Rican rent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would go in the stores with a group of friends, and one of the guys would scream out, ah, llegaron los negros ladrones. You know? And then I would bust out and say something in Spanish, and they'll be like, oh, you know, no, you know, we didn't mean it like that or something like that. It's like, yeah, you did, you know. And I guess, you know, being in situations with, let's say, my mom or my sister, where we had to get a point across but we didn't want other people around us to know what we were talking about or something like that. So we could always fall back to the Spanish, you know. As far as job-wise, it really never helped much. As far as school, of course, I mean, I was in school taking Spanish 1. You know, I was in 12th grade taking Spanish 1. You know, so it's kind of like, yeah, all right, that's an easy passing grade, you know.
Great. Now, are you married?
Yes.
How did you meet your wife?
Oh, man. You know that already.
I don't. I heard a little bit of it.
You don't?
FSU?
Yeah, she decided to do a semester abroad at Florida State University here in Panama, and I was working at Florida State University as, you know, in the computer lab or whatever, and I saw her, and I liked her, I mean, I guess, you know. So, she was from New York. She's like, you know, she's from New York. I go, oh, well, you know, I'm from New York. So we kind of related a little bit on that level, you know. Even though we didn't grow up in the same neighborhood or anything like that, but, you know, New York is New York, you know. So we, you know, went out a few times or whatever. And she was actually not finished with her university yet. She was only going to do a semester abroad and go back to the States. So she did that semester abroad. It was the spring semester. Then she left to the States. Then she came back to do the summer semester abroad. But it was, you know, she came back because of us, you know. So then we had to figure out how we were going to do that. So anytime she got a break, like spring break, winter break, or something like that, she would come to Panama or whatever. So we met at Florida State University, yeah, while she was a student and I was an employee there. And it was kind of one of the best things that ever happened to me.
All right. Do you have children?
Racial background.
Family, okay. Do you have family who live overseas? And if so, where do they live? Well, I'm assuming back where you were growing up as a teenager.
Uh-huh.
Anywhere else?
I have family in the United States mainly. I mean, you know, New York, mm-hmm. New Jersey, mm-hmm. Virginia, mm-hmm. Atlanta, mm-hmm. California, Texas. Yes, that's basically it.
Now, related to them, when they come, do they come to visit Panama often?
Yeah, they come. They come. Yeah.
And when they come, do other Panamanians see or treat them as less Panamanian and more American, or do they still seem to be Panamanians who just happen to be living abroad?
Some people know difference, and some people automatically assume that some of them are stuck up. You know, which is, you know, not true at all. And some assume that they're just well off, which is not necessarily the case. So it's three different assumptions. You know, well, two assumptions and one, like, yeah, or whatever, you know, I saw you growing up running around barefoot, you know, so it's no big deal to me. And then there's the people that assume that, oh, you think you're better than me or whatever because you live in the States. And they, those people create that, you know. Those people, they create that. And then there's that people think that, oh, you know, they're better off because they are in the States, when it's, which is not necessarily the case.
Now, I know you have lived abroad or overseas in Brooklyn, but have you lived anywhere else in addition, and where and when?
No, nowhere else.
All right. Now, you've already talked to me about your experience growing up in Brooklyn. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about your experience bring up there overall, but also in terms of what people seem to know and think about Panamanians, or just about Panamanian West Indians.
Okay, well, there's two things, right? The first thing is, when I first get to Brooklyn, I'm dealing with 11-year-old kids. An 11-year-old kid doesn't know a lot. Most 11-year-old kids doesn't know what Panama is, where Panama is. And so many of the 11-year-old kids, as soon as you speak Spanish, you're Puerto Rican. Okay? Now it's different. Now they probably think you're Mexican. Back then, it's like, oh, you're Puerto Rican. You must be Puerto Rican. You speak Puerto Rican speak Spanish. You know? So, I mean, that's just how it was. There was no one had any idea of who was a Panamanian or what's a Panamanian or, you know, or any of that stuff. Now, what was interesting is that my skin was darker than what it is now. I mean, I was a very dark boy. They used to call me Memín sometimes. You know Memín? Memín, the Mexican cartoon guy.
I've heard about it. Did they make a stamp about it?
Yeah, they made a stamp in Mexico about Memín. Mm-hmm. Here in Panama, they used to call me Memín.
Really?
Yeah, because I was dark. There were a lot of comments in Panama. There were a lot of comments the kids made in Panama because of the color of my skin. Not the color of my skin. Okay, overall my skin was black, but it was dark. It was a very dark boy. You know, so people would be like, you know, stay out of the sun. You don't want to get any darker. You know, that kind of stuff, you know. So it's like, so you start to think like, the darker I am, the worse I am. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you don't want to go in the sun because if you get darker, that's bad. You know what I'm saying? So, but a lot of it also happened in the States, too, with the 11-year-old kids, you know. Charcoal, you know, they'll have a nickname for, you know, for you if you're really dark or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting was that because I spoke Spanish, many of the kids said that I was not black. Many kids would say, oh, you're not black. You know? So I was like, oh, you know, what are you talking about, you know? I'm darker than you, you know. So, but that was basically, I mean, the darkness of my skin was more, and maybe the languages I spoke was more relevant than being from Panama. You know, being from Panama meant nothing to them. As I got older now, we talk in high school, then, you know, some of the kids know, you know, about, you know, different places. So, oh, you're Panamanian. I had a friend that's Panamanian. Oh, I know a Panamanian family or something like that, you know. Not all, but, you know, some, you know, we got older kids now. Now the high school that I was in, now we got people from different places. They're still all black, but, you know, people from different neighborhoods now and stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, so, but I can't say that I was treated a certain way because I was Panamanian. I really can't say that. Most kids, by the time, once I got to learn English, or got my New York accent right, no one knew that I was Panamanian. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to tell them that I was Panamanian, or they had to hear me speak in Spanish, and then, you know, like, whoa, what's going on here? And like, oh, yeah, I'm Panamanian or something. So honestly, being Panamanian really, with my friends, didn't mean much. Now, I have friends. I had other friends that were Panamanian, and we kind of got together because, you know, maybe my mom knew their parents because they're Panamanian or whatever like that. So you got a Panamanian friend here and there and stuff like that. Okay. But I wasn't really out there looking for Panamanian friends.
And this thing that would happen where if you spoke Spanish, people just decided you weren't black. Did that happen only with African Americans, or also with maybe white teachers or students that you encountered, even though you said...
No, I don't recall that scenario with any of the teachers.
Okay.
Only the students.
And
I remember this one situation I had with a teacher because of my accent. I like math a lot. So I'm in this classroom with Mr. Alexander, and we have a test like the next day, so we're preparing for the test. So when you solve a problem, and sometimes you have to show the work and then check it, right? So I asked the teacher if he wanted us to check it for the exam. He said, "Do you want us?" I said, "Mr. Alexander, do you want us to check our answers?" And he goes, "What?" I said, "Do you want us to check our answer?" He looks at me like, "What? What are you saying?"
Mm.
You know, this is an African American.
Yeah.
You know. So I'm sitting here like, wow, you know,
mm-hmm.
What does he understand what I'm saying?
Mm.
So I say the third time, I said, "Do you want us to check our answer?" He said, "No, check. Mm. Do you want us to check our answer?" You know, you ever seen the Flintstones, how sometimes Fred just shrinks, like he turns into like a little...
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like a... So that day I learned how to pronounce CH and how to listen to the difference between CH and SH and that kind of word.
Right.
So, but I really didn't have any problems with my accent with teachers. With students at first, you know, they used to make fun of me. And again, if you didn't speak... If you spoke Spanish, you were Puerto Rican. If you spoke a funny English, you were Jamaican.
Right.
You know? So it's like, "Oh, are you Jamaican?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get this thing like, "You Jamaican?" You know? So it's like, "No, you know, I'm not Jamaican."
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually once, you know, I got the New York accent, it's like, no one will ever ask if I was Jamaican or French.
Mm-hmm.
But the teachers, nah. One teacher, the Spanish teacher in 12th grade, he's an African. He's from Africa, actually. And he could have been the only one that reacted a certain way to my Spanish, but he didn't. You know, being from Africa, he probably spoke 5-6 different languages and knew a lot about different cultures and stuff like that, so there was no Panamanian or anything like that.
No.
And also the Spanish-speaking kids, the Puerto Ricans or the Dominicans, even though most of them live, were born in the States, you know, when I mentioned Panama, it wasn't something strange to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some reason, Panama was not like a strange place to them. It was like, "Oh yeah, Panama, you know Panama, you know." But they live in, they born and raised in the States, speak Spanish, don't know how to write it or read it necessarily, but they speak Spanish. But then I tell them, "Oh yeah, I'm Panamanian." "Oh, okay, you're Panamanian." It's kind of interesting when I think about it. I mean, everything about them is, you know, American, except that they speak Spanish, so how come they know when I say Panama, but the black kids don't know when I say Panama?
Mm.
Anyway, what was the question?
That was how people, what people knew about Panamanians or West Indian Panamanians,
mm.
So that's good. That's actually, I'm thinking that might be salsa related, because of a lot of the musicians in the main.
Okay, Ruben Blades. Yeah, Ruben Blades probably had a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now we're almost at the end. Is there any specific message you would like to communicate to the older generation, meaning the generations born before you and
mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, that's interesting too. The older generation went through a lot of hardship, right? And the older generation was brought up to assimilate in order to not stand out and be discriminated against, you know? So, I'll give you an example. My great-grandmother spoke English, and she taught my grandmother English. So my grandmother spoke English. My grandmother taught my mom English. So my mom spoke English, right? But this didn't happen in all families, right? So now, what happens now is that It wasn't an issue for my grandmother because she didn't go to Spanish school. So she wasn't necessarily a target when she, because she didn't go anywhere, you know? So now, my mom goes to school now, she goes to Spanish school. You know what I'm saying? So now, she goes to school with Spanish kids. So now, if she speaks English now, she stands out. And standing out is something bad, you know? So what happened? And it's not something necessarily, it didn't happen in my family, but it happened in many families where the kids are going to school now and they are being treated a certain way because they speak English, because they stand out, and they don't want to be treated that way. So the only way not to be treated that way is to become part of the crowd and not speak English. Right? So, there were two ways to do this. Okay, you see your other friend that speaks English, and you don't speak English. Or you only speak English when you are only, you two guys are together. You know, if other people are together, you don't speak English at all. So, that's not too bad. You know, that's not too bad. But then some decided, you know what? I'm going to forget about the English. Right? Because this English is causing that, you know, that people discriminate against me. You know? And kids hate being discriminated against. More so than adults. Because adults understand discrimination and can deal with it. But kids cannot understand other kids not wanting to play with them or treating them different. The kids don't understand that. So, many parents allowed for their kids to assimilate the Spanish culture and forget about the original culture. Right? And this goes further. This goes even further than Panama. This goes back to being forced to assimilate the master's culture. You know, it was a point where we were forced to assimilate. No, your name is not Kunta, your name is Toby. You know, so there was a point where you were forced to assimilate a culture. So we assimilate our culture and we twisted it, you know. We assimilated the master, slave master culture, but we still twisted it, you know, to give it our flavor. Now, so now we got the slave master culture, but we got our own little flavor to it. So now we got to pass this on to our kids now. So now we pass this on to our kids now, but now our kids get discriminated against now when they go to this, you know, the main culture in the place. So I think many parents failed in allowing their kids to assimilate this culture and forget about their original, which wasn't really their original culture, but whatever culture they came to the country with. So, you know, I'm kind of mad at them for that. You know, I'm kind of mad at the older generation. You go to Cologne now, and the kids don't speak English. And then their parents' parents spoke English. Why don't you speak English? And it's not so much, honestly, you know, let's be real here. It's not so much like, oh, English is black people speak English. No, black people didn't speak English originally. You know, so English is not the black people language. You know, some spoke French. You know, so what do you mean black people? You know, no, black people don't have to speak English. But if your parents and your grandparents spoke English, I think you should speak English. If your parents and your grandparents spoke French, I think you should also speak French. You know, and it's not, so, okay, in the cultural sense, it's kind of like, okay, I'm doing this because of a cultural thing, right? But you can also see as a personal benefit. You know, I speak two languages. I speak three languages. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? So if you don't want to see it with the cultural way, you know what I'm saying, then see it as benefiting from it. You know, if you go to a job interview and, hey, you say, yeah, I speak English. You know, my grandfather, he was one of the youngest foremen in one of the positions that he had with the canal, right? And one day, what happened was, they needed a foreman, and it was like, everybody spoke English. All the black guys that were there spoke English. And it was like, and they asked, anybody here knows how to read? You know? And my grandfather hesitated, and then he raised his hand. The guy's like, boy, you don't know how to read. You know? And what does that sign say? Carrie, what does the sign say, you remember? Safety is first. And my grandfather reads the sign, so the guy said, safety is first. Boom, he was a foreman. He was a foreman, a grown man, because he knew how to read. You know? So, I mean, that was like his, you know, the thing that he had above the others. You know? So, an additional language seen as the thing that you can have above the others. You all go to school. You all go to the university. So, okay, what do you have, you know? So, that could be one of the things that you have above the others. So I'm very disappointed of many of the older generation that decided to not force, you know, because I think the kids should have been in a way forced, you know, to learn this additional language, whether it was French, whether it was English, and not just language wise, food, you know. It's like, I have an aunt that she's a pastry thing, and she does the bhaji and planting tarts and that kind of stuff. And sadly, when she dies, that stuff is gone. You know, when my aunt dies, no one else in the family is left with whatever was in her head. No one. That's like, man, I mean, you know, that's serious. You know, I think that's serious. You understand? It's like, some, you know, I was reading this a long time ago about Native American language that only a few people know this language, and they're trying to get these people, you know, because they don't want this language to die or something like that. And they're trying to write this down and, you know, and create this work with these people. It's like, that's what should be happening. You know, that's what should be happening. Whatever anyone in your family has something from the original culture that they might be the last person with that should be recorded. You know, that should be recorded, and somebody should try to keep that going. You know, because once that person dies, that is gone. It's gone. You know, that's serious, man. That's like a piece of the culture gone. You know. And I think the older generation failed in keeping things going because the assimilation thing, they kind of like, you know, don't want to be different, don't want to stand out. I don't see anything wrong with being different and standing out. And so I think that's I got a lot of stuff to say to them, but that's one of the things. That's one of the things
Cool. Very good. Very good. I think you're the first person to really spell that out, which is good.
Spell what out?
That whole, you know, the feeling of why, how is this possible? how does this even happen? Why? Well, we're pretty much done unless there is any other information you would like to include that we have not yet touched upon.
Not really. I mean, I hope that this gets into the hands of the right people, you know, the people that need it, or that the people that should have access to it. Because what happens, it's like when you go to an art event in Panama, who's there? All the artists are there. Mm-hmm. You understand? So it's kind of like, okay, I'm an artist, you're an artist, we go to the art event, you're not going to buy my art, and I'm not going to buy your art because I'm a starving artist just like you are, you understand? So what happens, or what I'm afraid of, what might happen is that the people that get access to the information, you know, the people that kind of like already knew, they know about it, or they agree with what's being said, you know. So the whole idea of what you guys are doing is more of the people that have no clue getting access to it, or the people that disagree getting access to it. Because then when you get the people that disagree, that will get people talking. You know what I'm saying? So that's the kind, I mean, I hope you guys get the opportunity to present this to the right people. You know, that's very important. Yeah, you know, we got this collection and we got this knowledge and okay, and we got it in public, but then who goes read it? The people that, you know, it makes no difference to them. You know, then you're okay, because you're giving me a physics book, but I got a PhD in physics. You know? So I think that's the last thing. I really hope that this gets across, and also, I mean, it's impossible to get all of the stories, and it's, you know, everyone has a story, and in that story there's something that you've never heard in another story. You know what I'm saying? So it's impossible to get all of the stories. You know, but I guess some things will have to be generalized, so you have to reach certain conclusion based on the story that you read. But there are so many stories out there, good stories, bad stories, sad stories. You know, there's a lot of bad stuff, sad stuff, even within our communities. You know, there's a lot of stuff that nobody will talk about, nobody wants to talk about that happened, you know. But I think those stories should also be heard. The rags to riches, the riches story, I mean, those stories are also, you know, excellent stories. I mean, you know, yeah, we all have some sort of struggle, but some of us, you know, made it well off, you know. I think those stories are important, you know. Those stories are very important, because then what happens now is that, you know, it's like you give people the light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, wow, you know, this guy grew up in the bush and ran around bare feet, and now he has this, and he owns that. Not he works for this and he works for that. Oh, he owns this and he owns that, and he employs this amount of people in that kind of way. You know, so we need those stories. We need those stories where God comes out and says, you know, I employ X amount of people, and I own this place, and I own that place, and you know. And some people will hear the stories and be like, oh, he just boasts and whatever. No, we need those stories. Yeah. We need those stories.
Great. Well, thank you again for participating. And feel free to contact us if you have any questions or want to add any additional contributions.
No problem. Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Vic.